Hey, Wonderfuls, welcome one and all to the start of the Max Fun Drive. Now, you know this is such an exciting time, or maybe you don't. Listen, if you have been listening not that long and you don't know what Max Fun Drive is, I'll tell you, it's such an exciting time of the year where you get to show your love for all the Max Fun Network shows you listen to, including the JV Club. How do you do that, you might ask? It's so easy. You go to MaximumFun.org/join to become a Max Fun member. Just enter your payment information, select the shows that you love, and for as little as $5 a month, you are making sure the media that you love can keep going for another year. But guess what? This is not just a one-way exchange. By paying for the show, not only will the regular podcast sound better because you, yes, you, helped make it a reality, you also get hours upon hours upon hours of bonus content, not just for my show, from every show on the network, including my show. You will hear full-length interviews from the amazing Tatiana Maslany, who technically was like one of my last hugs before COVID started. I'll always remember that. And Darcy Carden, too, was, actually. I also had a very special chat with Carrie Poppy, where we read our high school journals to each other. I don't know if I've ever laughed so hard on the show, but there's also so much more. And that's all waiting for you at MaximumFun.org/join. And before this is over and you anxiously await the full episode of the show later this week, I am going to give you an exclusive preview of all the JV Club BOCO that's waiting for you right now when you become a Max Fun member. Carrie Poppy is my guest for my BOCO episode. This is a very special non-JV Club tradition episode. You can listen to Carrie's marvelous stories of her teens. She has done my podcast. So go back, find the JV Club episode that puts a ton of this into even deeper and more fun context. But all that being said, Carrie and I both have some journals and diaries and notebooks and whatever else you want to call scrawling your feelings from your teenage heart that we are going to share with each other, if who are you all. And I have been doing this podcast for 10 years now. I have never shared anything from my journals.
Really?
And I talk about my teen years all the time.
Whoa.
I'm really
this
embarrassed
is a big
by
drop.
That. Yeah, it's a big deal. I've always thought like I should do that. And then I start thumbing through my journals and I'm like, oh no, I was such a goober. And or just so, you know, it was like either too boy or girl crazy or both, or and that's all I was writing about, or just like trying to sound smart and pretentious. And so
I can't believe how much
better if it just stays a mystery.
Yeah, I can't believe how much space is devoted to Jesus Christ himself in this journal. I'm just looking back through it and I'm like, did you have anything else to say?
That's that lofty important. Compared to some of my shit. That's lofty. I mean, I definitely was, I wrote some song lyrics down. I have like a huge stack that I narrowed down to like five, and then I was flipping through and I was trying to like isolate some that I thought maybe would help sort of paint a picture, because some of it is just nonsense. Like, you just wouldn't even, you would just be like, what are you talking about? Who is this? None of the context is important enough to have to try to explain. So I tried to pick some stuff. Would you put this in physical context? Like, where was this? Oh. Just for anybody who is going to listen to your JV Club episode later.
Yeah, let's see. So
they have like a slight framework.
This thing that I found is from, it starts in June 1999, so I was about to turn 16 when it starts. Okay. I've been really in with the church crowd for like 3 years. So I found Jesus at church camp when I was turning 13, I believe. So it's like 3 years of church culture here. But my parents weren't religious. I did this all on my own. Now it just feels like a very sort of extended phase, but from like 13 to somewhere in my mid 20s, I believed. Yeah. And now I don't at all. So this is just like such a weird time to look back on. And
geographically, where was the church camp? Like, geographically, where were you?
Yeah. Church camp itself was in, it was a place called Forest Home that was, I forget the town, but it was outside Big Bear.
Okay.
But this isn't like specifically a church camp journal. Yeah. That's just, yeah, that's the context of my life at that time. But should I read you some of it?
I wish you would. I cannot wait. Please do.
Well,
Please
Okay,
do.
I'm just gonna open to a random page and let's honestly see, am I talking about Jesus if I just
Okay.
random one in point?
Great.
Okay.
Everyone, if it is, please take a drink of whatever you're drinking.
One man gives freely, yet gains even
No.
more. Another
No.
withdraws unduly, but comes to poverty. A generous man will prosper. He who refreshes another will himself be refreshed. People curse the man who hoards grain, but blessing crowns him who is willing to sell. Who knows what was going on in my life? Does anyone
Scriptures
know?
are nice. Scriptures are fun. Scriptures, when I went, listen, we all love the things that, those bon mots that whether we're quoting bands that we love or scriptures or poetry, or movie quotes. I feel like I have movie quotes in here. Like, we're looking for the wisdom of our elders and the wisdom of artists and the wisdom of writers, whether it's religious script and text or, you know what I mean? Like, half the stuff that comes out of the Quran, I'm like, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard, truly. Like, it's beauty, you know what I
That's
mean?
a
The
very
grain, listen, the grain, you wanted to make sure to preserve or reap the grain.
a very positive spin, and in a way you're right, except I think you're neglecting the ratio of the situation. I flipped through and picked a random passage, and it was Proverbs 11. Anyway, okay.
Something was happening that you were like this. Maybe
Yeah,
would it have been that
okay.
you were studying it specifically, or would it have been that you were going through and reading the scriptures and you were like, this one speaks to me today for this
Oh,
reason?
dang, that's a really good question. I bet it would be that someone at church referred to this like in passing in a talk, and then I
Yeah.
wrote it down and was like, I have to read the exact thing that that referred to.
Yes.
That was
Yes.
usually
Okay.
the context, which
Okay.
has
That makes
continued
sense.
in my personality now that I think about
Aha.
it.
All right,
Yeah.
and like I said, I did fold down some corners 'cause some of it I really was like if I just open this randomly, we're going to be then nothing is going to make sense. It's going to be trouble. Oh, this one. Oh, okay. So this one was really interesting because I didn't remember this at all. And apparently I had like a whole like conflict my freshman year in my theater class, in my drama class. It says, once again, I totally doubt my acting abilities. And again, I like it was the only thing I really felt like I could do, but by the time I was even just getting ready to go to college, I was like, I don't know, like I'm not gonna major in acting. I could like, what am I gonna do? This is a fruitless
Oh
job.
yeah.
Like it's not a job, it's not a job.
There's a
Once again,
practical thing going on there.
practical thing. So this would have been when I was, I guess I would have just turned 14, maybe. Once again, I totally doubt my acting abilities. Why, oh, why did I have to wait to prepare my monologues? Should I continue to pursue my aspirations as an actress? Everyone managed to stick a stick in my wheels. I'll change the names to protect the innocent. Susan announced that she was a much better actress than any of us. Joe managed to add their part about not griping when our teacher said, this doesn't even make sense. Then here, Paul was awful. Again, changing the names. Paul was awful. He cut me low, then tried to get on my good side while telling me how, quote, he always stood up for me when no one thinks I'm a good actress, quote.
Oh my God, these kids are really cruel.
It's so mean. I may doubt myself, but acting is what I need to do, or something like that. It was like ready for any substitute, or something underline, or something like that. Shit, all I needed was to watch my self-confidence go to shreds at this particular point in life. Now all I need is for blank to dump my ass in the dust, which is bound to happen soon. This person, this guy, in when I was a freshman, he was a senior. We never dated. Like we were not
Whoa.
together. We did not hold hands. We did not kiss. We were just hanging out. But apparently, like the second I saw his name, I was like, no. Like I knew immediately. I was like, no, we never made out. Like nothing.
Okay.
But apparently, I had convinced myself that, like, we were because we were hanging out after
Yeah,
school.
yeah,
Like
yeah.
that's it.
It's
We were hanging
like
out after
low
school.
key erotomania. Okay, cool.
Someday, underlined, I'll get out of all this bullshit and enjoy life again. It just hurts to know that close to no one thinks I can act.
God.
Seriously, I think I was the only person there tonight that didn't punch someone in the face. What? Oh, someone that, you know, I didn't punch someone in the face, like make someone feel like people were all making each other
Oh,
feel bad, and
metaphorical. Okay.
I didn't metaphorically punch someone
Okay.
in the face.
It's good to make your metaphors clearer. But yeah,
Yeah.
okay. Okay, got it.
So that's I felt like I needed to act or
Or
something like
something like that. How
that.
old were you there?
I would have just turned 14.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Like freshman year, would have just turned 14.
Aw. Well, are you?
This bu the bullshit of my life.
But
Oh.
it's kind of rewarding to see something that you're still doing. Oh my God, I actually wanted to do it that long ago.
Yes, that is true, except for the giant space of time where I had zero confidence and zero interest in doing it. And like all that got filled in with other stuff too. So it is satisfying to have come back around to it.
Yeah.
But when I read that, I do think to myself, like, oh yeah, like I was so easily discouraged and so sensitive. And one of the reasons that I walked away from it when I was in college were in part because I had like a professor who, you know, was like, meh, you're not so great. And I was like, you're right, I'm not great. I don't need to do this. I don't need to do this. In fact, I'll leave this school. I'll just leave this school. In fact, I'll leave this
Oh
town.
man. Okay. Yeah, no,
Yeah, just running
I
away.
remember things like that too. I remember at one point saying to my dad that like maybe I want to be a journalist. And my dad was like, that's as hard as being an actor. That's as hard as like you might as well be auditioning, you know, and like pumping out headshots. That's so impossible. Which was a really like stellar insult because that is what I was already doing. I was in LA to be an actor. So it's like, cool. So all you're saying is like
You're like, I think I found a more mature, grown-up, thoughtful profession. And he's like, ah,
Just
screw it.
stick with
Pump out
the,
those headshots. Might
go
as
back to
well.
the groundlings, kid.
Oh,
But you know,
no.
I say that knowing like my dad had no idea that little thing would like stick on me for a few years, you know, but you do just go
Sure.
like, well, that's kind of rational. I guess it is a very competitive field. You know, I mean, I don't think he meant anything by it, but yeah, those little moments
Oh,
just like
Dad.
stick with you.
Yep. Do you feel like when you see, presuming that you've seen a movie or two like Her
Seen
or
it.
any number of these, you know, sort of Can I Fall in Love with Artificial Intelligence, like Black Mirror kind of stuff? Do you feel like, is there part of you that's like, yeah, we're definitely headed there? Or do you,
Oh,
yeah,
deeply. I mean, I
right.
pay more attention. My phone takes precedence over a human. Speaking of which, I should shut it off. But like it
Leave it
fully.
on and take
Do you
calls
want
and
to
text all
hear?
the way through. I'm going to
I'll
be the
read my
one host
text
who
aloud.
encourages distraction.
Yeah, it's bad. And I see my friends do it too. I'll be in the middle of something kind of emotional, and someone will just be like, doing. And I don't fault them for it. I'm
Yeah.
not like, but yeah, we
I
love.
wonder if that's. Ugh, here I go
Go for
with zero experience,
it.
like coming from nowhere.
Yeah, can't wait.
I wonder if we've become accustomed to being rescued from like the present and tense and emotional situations, even if it's positive emotion. I wonder if like we're so conditioned now to be in touch with whatever is external to us in that moment that there is some part of you that's like, I do want to marry you. Hold on. You know what? Let me just quickly like regroup, like some sort of weird like emotion
Coping
check.
mechanism.
Yeah.
I think Miranda July was talking about like writing.
I love her.
Yeah, she's so cool. And she was talking about her writing process has become so fucked up by the fact that she has a phone, because there's times when she'd be writing and she'd hit something that she was like, I don't like this. I'm bored. I can't go any further, blah, blah, blah. And instead of pushing through that to what would invariably be like a very interesting, unexpected thing on the
Right,
other side,
right.
she would go to her phone. So it
Yeah.
became this like, the like, yeah, the, What is the word for when you put one thing in the space of another?
The sublimation, I guess.
I wanted to say that. Yeah. Is that the right word?
Yeah. I mean, I think if there's a thing you would normally do and instead you sub in something, yeah. then I think that means yeah. that's what that is.
So for like that creative block,
yeah.
that became yeah. the space holder for it.
Absolutely. This is a weird thing to say, but I had a friend years ago who realized he was doing that with pornography.
What do you mean?
Like he was a writer.
Would go to-
and he would write and write and write, and then he'd hit a block, and in his mind he would like be like, I just need a release. And then he realized Dude. That he was just sort of like, he wasn't coming back in any kind of real way. He was like, this is
I
a real problem for me.
Every time I sit down to read a script,
yeah.
I immediately have to leave to do my business. Uh-huh. I'm like, suddenly I'm very interested in
very
taking care of my pleasure. Like I don't know if it's like a distraction method or if it's like, ooh, work gets me right. going. I have no idea. But as so many of my friends have said it, they're like, as soon as they get yeah. sides, they're like in the bedroom. Yeah.
That's a wonderful, weird, great thing to yeah. find out you have in common with people. God, I love actors for just being that forthright.
Just like creatures,
that would actually
just
come
animals.
Through.
Yeah, 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 exactly.
I mean, that's a real, yeah, it really, and it is such a, it is one of those sort of quote unquote base or instincts or whatever, like one of our simplest functions.
Yeah, yeah.
Simplest to understand, perhaps, unless it gets all up in there. But
sure.
if it's just physical,
yeah.
It is really funny that would be, yeah, I mean, it is. Or eating,
oh,
you know,
yeah.
like those
Starving.
Sorts of like, suddenly I'm no you know what
oh
I should eat first I shouldn't eat prepare this or read this
no.
on an empty stomach
no, no,
I'm,
it all, won't,
I,
it won't
I'm all foggy
exactly
and then I eat and I'm like oh I'm digesting
yeah
so I'm food foggy
no I'm gonna watch TV
I should yeah if I just chill and watch a little TV research
right yeah for sure so, research and development
oh no
it's bad
But did you, I'm going to go back to the emotional robots.
Yeah.
Emotionless robots. Agreed. I feel like I'm so willing to believe everything has the best of my best interest at heart, which is so naive uh-huh. to be like, I know that robot vacuum wants me to not have allergies.
Yes,
I know
yes,
it's
yeah.
looking out for me
yeah.
as it like comes towards me with knives.
That's
you know,
that's a nice
I think
thing,
I would
though.
Be, I would be probably like the first one to, you know, with the Turing test or whatever, I'd be like, I'm
right.
pretty sure. But I've never been catfished or anything like that. So it's
no.
all still very much in the abstract because I don't live
uh-huh.
in the computer space the way like some young people do.
Yes,
or,
right.
But did you have... Like, were you one of those kids that wanted those, like, robotic, like, the various ones we've had through the years, these robotic toys? Like, I remember Teddy Ruxpin.
Oh, yeah, that
was,
one
like,
scared
you know,
me.
Super scary. And, like,
yeah.
the scariest one was one called My Buddy.
Yes,
which
yes,
was
I remember
like,
that.
I'm a human boy.
Yeah, and it was kind of dark. Like, it was
it's,
sort
yeah,
of like eyes were dead.
Yeah, oh, dead. Yeah. I gotta have dead eyes.
Gotta have them
dead
eyes.
Dead eyes.
I
Did
have,
you have any of those? Like,
yeah, I always
automatons.
Liked the thing that talked to me. I think the most notable one was, like, a little Raphael that you had, like, a little... Raphael, Teenage Mutant Ninja
yeah.
Turtle, my favorite one.
Not the artist.
The bad boy. No.
yeah, I was painting this beautiful painting for you.
It's very rich. I had this little toy and it would pull this, you pull this string through it and it would say cowabunga or whatever. And it was like, this is my dream.
Yeah.
I also ascribed like human qualities to not only toys, but like concepts as well. Like the color brown felt like a color no kid was like, that's my favorite color.
Right.
And I felt bad for it.
Oh.
So I was like, I'm going to choose that's my favorite color because I'm a little saint. And I became the champion of that color.
I stood up for that color.
I stood up for that color.
In the school year.
Yeah,
when people were beating
red.
Up brown.
Exactly.
That's
yeah.
amazing.
Yeah.
I don't know that I felt that way. Although for sure, like at a zoo or something,
oh, yeah.
like the neglected animal, I think I would be like, I got to go see that ostrich. No
yeah.
one cares about this ostrich. And this ostrich seems kind of like a dick.
Right.
But it could just be that he's lonely, you know?
Yeah, go give him my eyes for a
yeah,
while.
I'll yeah, I'll just go, ugh, here's a favor, buddy.
Yeah.
But a cousin of that, that I've talked about before is like... Like in a group of like in a you know like a Boys to Men or like an NSYNC or
mm-hmm.
the Monkees reruns on Nickelodeon.
Oh, I'd love
like
them.
Singling out the least desirable Not necessarily because you feel bad for them, but because you feel that increases your chances.
Maybe get a date.
Yes.
Really?
Yes. I relate to that. There's a sense of like, I never hear anyone talking about so-and-so. Like, yeah. I guess I like
I
him
actually
best.
Like him the best.
Yeah.
That was me. That was me a little bit with like Rick Moranis. I was like, he's hot to me. I still say that. Like, yeah. I'm still like, he's the hot one.
Yeah.
He's the one we all want to have.
He's a hot one, like from SCTV.
Yeah. Like just from like general comedy. Like, yeah. It's a hot group. It's a sexy group. And he was the hottest of that group.
Conventionally.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, that's really funny.
No, totally. I think that, yeah. I think we're just really good people.
I guess that's what it is.
I think we just care so much.
I guess we really do.
We love an underdog.
Growing up in New Jersey, like I idolized New York City. And still to this day, yeah. It's like my favorite city. It's not even real to me. It's like I feel like I'm on a movie set. Like I love when I get to act in New York. To me, that's like, for, I don't know, whatever reason, I'm like, I feel like I made it. When I get to act on the streets of New York City, I'm like, this is real. I'm not on a soundstage in LA faking it. Like you're in New York and it just, it's the greatest feeling in the world because that city to me was just like, that was being in a movie. Just even going to the city was so big and just I couldn't wrap my head around it as a little kid. And for my whole life, it's just such a special place to me.
Yeah. God, that's so, you're such the perfect actor then to do some of the stuff that you've done for like who could Marty Scorsese want to work with more than the guy who's like, when I'm on the streets of New York acting, that's when I know it's real.
No, I do. I swear to God, it's real. I mean, there was even one day doing vinyl and I'll never forget with Ray Romano and we took two things. One time we took over a diner and then one time we took over like this famous steakhouse. And then in the diner scene, we were sitting like in the window and you're not allowed to shut down the city, right? In New York, it's crazy. So like regular people, you got to like play the game, but I'll never forget. We're in this window diner in this like just great field diner. And we're making them make us food. Like the diner's like, we'll make the food for the scene. I'm like, this is great. Cause I worship diner food. So I'm eating these amazing eggs. I'm doing this great scene with my buddy, Ray Romano, which is like magical, who I love.
Yeah.
And then they're popping all these old time buses coming by and I'm just like, this might be my happiest moment, like acting. This is so fantastic. Yeah. It also just feels so real because there's and it's the work is so much less because first of all, Ray's such a good actor, so he just makes it seamless, but like I'm not imagining anything right now. It's all so genuine and it's just so special. And you're like I just couldn't believe it, like, this is the city I worshiped, and now I get to do the thing I love the most in this city. It was great.
And those moments are so important, too, with what we do, because, you know, kind of what you were saying earlier, like, you can sort of get wrapped up in the humdrum of, you know, a lot of downtime or, you know, being someplace on just sort of a hot set that, you know, sort of doesn't feel, it doesn't give you that same sense of imagination and that same sort of childlike wonder at what we get to do. Although I will say, and I'm sure I've said this on the podcast before, but still sometimes like driving onto a studio, especially driving, because so often when we audition, we have to walk on, you know? But even sometimes walking on like that definitely that feeling of, you know, oh, this is where it all happens.
I could definitely
connect with that.
I'll add to that. So when I came to LA, God bless Chris O'Donnell. I was lucky enough when I came to LA to start doing commercials. That's how I really started. Like those are the days where like you got a commercial and like you made a nice number from a commercial. I was like, I can't believe I'm getting paid this much money for one day of work. But at the same time, I wanted to like know the business side of Hollywood, right? So my sister was like best friends with Chris O'Donnell's sister. And his brother-in-law was actually running his company. And Chris also went to Boston College. So I went over to them. I'm like, look, can I just be an intern? You don't have to pay me. And that's the time when Chris had like his big deal. He was like Robin and he had a deal at Warner Brothers. And he had his company called George Street Pictures. I'll never forget this. And so they gave me a script to do coverage on this script. I did the coverage like, oh my God, you know what you're talking about. So they're like, come be our story editor for the company. And I'm like, listen, I came, you know, here to act. They're like, no, come and go as you please. So it was like, I was given such a gift to like work in development over on a studio lot and at the same time go act and, you know, and just be able to handle both worlds. But what was amazing about that opportunity was I went on to the Warner Brothers lot every day. And that to me is like my favorite lot. It's such a, that's like a magical place, just like New York City is to me. And you just feel the history. And I'll never forget this. I always used to walk by the ER soundstage. And I said to myself, I will never walk into that soundstage unless I am invited. So that was like the New York to me. It was like the soundstage of ER, because I always had to pass it every day and I never even poked my head in. And I'll never forget the day like I booked ER and I was like really allowed to walk into that set. Like that was such a special day. And Warner Brothers, is because of that reason, is always such a special place to me.
Yeah. Yeah. When I first came to LA, I had a similar, and by the way, don't you feel like having the sort of experience of seeing the business from any other angle other than acting is so helpful terms of like depersonalizing 100%. The things that are painful and just having a sense of the larger picture so that you're not turning everyone in who doesn't hire you into like someone you assume hates you.
But that's another thing of not making each audition such a big deal. And I still fight that sometimes too. And you got to remember, like, you can't bring like that fear into the audition. I mean, I feel like casting people and producers, they smell fear. They're like sharks smell blood. So if you're not, if you're bringing any of that into the audition, I feel like you're dead at arrival.
And you would know dead on arrival because as a professional, you worked on ER. You would know.
And Final Destination 5.
Oh, that's
where
right.
I was killed twice.
That's right.
Right. And I always make the joke, I was like, I'm not doing the first four. If you get to 5, you call me, but I'm not touching the first four. I'm not going near it. But if you do 5, give me a call. Give me a call. Yeah.
Yeah. We get it.
Yeah.
Listen, you and me, we get it. When I first came down, I feel like you're asking me so much.
I love you.
Well, guess what? It's going to get turned back on you. That spotlight's going to be so hot. You're not even going to be able to know what to do. When I came down, similarly, I had a person I had worked for in San Francisco who connected me with a prop stylist in LA who was working on like a magazine editorial, and he hired me as his assistant, and he had me go to all of the prop and costume houses at the big studios to comb through and like find these specific things we were looking for to dress the set with. And it was exactly what you're describing. Like, it felt so magical.
Oh my God,
and it
I
felt like
that.
Like, I had imposter syndrome. Like, I can't believe that I'm just waving my ID and someone's letting me park right in front of this warehouse. And then I'm just going in and, like, poking around.
I'm
like, you know, because they just sort
choices.
Of go, yeah.
Wow. Yes.
Yeah. They're just like, oh, yeah, here, you know, here, help yourself. Like, the glittery stuff is over on aisle 18.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And you're just sort of on your own.
Yes.
And it was such a little kid feeling of, like, oh, my God. Like, oh, you almost have a feeling of, like, what if I just spent the night here? What if I hid and spent? I was like, why would you do that? Like,
this is a movie.
The little
Let's
kid
do
in
this.
You is
this
like,
is
yeah.
This is our night at the museum. Let's spin it off.
Exactly.
Spin it off.
Exactly.
That's great. I didn't know that. That's such a magical experience too. I love that.
Yeah.
Jumping
well,
in the history.
Because that...
if you look sometimes
exactly.
on, in like, my favorite thing as an actor sometimes too is to put on the shoes, right? Then I feel like I'm, I don't know, whatever reason, sometimes putting the shoe on really grounds me into that character. And one of my favorite
things... I wish
things,
that often that didn't mean stilettos for me. That's the only caveat on my end.
I told my wife, I'm like, after doing a show like in the 70s and I had to wear platform shoes, I'm like, you never, ever have to think you have to wear high heels or whatever for me. Because I'm like, this is brutal. This is... Why do people do this? This is brutal.
Yeah.
But was my point? Anyway, so I love looking at
the
shoes.
No, you're
shoes,
right, though,
the shoes, but I like looking in the shoes. Sometimes they have like old actors who wore those shoes like stitched in somewhere, and I'm just like, oh my God, the history of these shoes. I love it.
Yeah because people don't realize necessarily that they pull costumes from forever. Like, if they're in good shape, then they'll just use the real thing.
Yes.
It's not like someone just a costume quote-unquote designer is not necessarily a person who's drawing a bunch of new patterns to make it look like it's the 70s. It's like, no, if they have if they have a million things from the 70s and they fit like
and here's the other thing, I feel like other actors always are the ones they get to, like, yeah, you can take that with you after your war. Like, I'm never, for whatever, no one ever says PJ take that. They're like, we're gonna need that back from you. So I'm like, I have no gear.
That's because you're doing those period pieces.
Oh, they're like, we're gonna need that right back. We'll take that.
Yeah.
Right back.
Like, whereas, just, like, occasionally,
even today,
yeah.
Though,
if I'm,
like, God, I love that jacket. I look really like this is well fitted. I'm like, you clearly fit this. I went to a special place to get right. this jacket and suit fitted to my body. This is the best I've looked in my life. Uh-huh. In my life. And can I just keep this? Or like, we're gonna need that back. I'm like, what? Uh-huh. I'm like, I know there's no reshoots. I'm like, no one can afford to do $6 million at this day cost for me to be in right. the suit again. I promise you.
Right.
Sorry, right. Peter, we're gonna need that back from you. I'm like, okay.
We're gonna need that back. Okay. And in fact, could you get it cleaned for
and
us?
And like, yeah.
If you could go ahead and
do you have
a
good cleaners
that,
that we can trust as well? The overhead yeah. here is just too high.
I have this memory of being in junior high and being going to a church camp, going to this camp that my sister and I would go to in the summer. And one of the, you know how like a camp can be where you're away from home and you're sort of figuring out who you are. And I remember I remember many people were sort of having these like revelations, emotional breakdowns, whatever it was, like right. you're away from home and you're confessing something. Like there was I remember sort of finding out a lot about all these like
sure.
teens and preteens
sure,
life
sure, sure.
and being like, wow,
yeah,
I'm lucky. Like I have had, you know, whether it is something small, yeah. like a divorce or something huge, like abuse, like all these things that people needed to sort of like let off their chest or talk about. I remember just being like, I am a very lucky little girl.
Yeah.
But you know, then
at least you didn't have the thing that I think would have also been a perfectly natural, yeah. which is like, what do I have? Oh no, I don't have anything
no,
to
I think,
share.
I think I did have
I kind
that
of
a
wish
little bit.
I did have right. some, can I come up with some, is there right. anything?
Nothing. I remember being like, great. I mean, I've always had this sort of weird Pollyanna, like cheesy gratefulness for my family. I feel like I have, a great healthy relationship with my family and sort of always have
yeah
in a way where I've been very aware of that mm-hmm. I guess if mm-hmm. that makes sense.
No, that does. It makes sense. And I think I feel like off the top of my head I can think of one friend of mine who 100% had that
right
and it seemed like this thing to aspire right. to. Even when I was like very angry with my mother right. it wasn't like I looked at him as the oddball going like, ugh, how yeah. can you like your parents
right.
I also loved his parents, you know what I mean? It was oh, like that kind yeah. of family yeah. where you're like, thank God you're grateful for your family because they are terrific yeah.
I really feel like that we had that and truly not to say that there weren't problems and you know like I don't mean we were perfect there was just like we just had a good vibe
yeah.
is literally what I was about to say. My family had
it's
a good
like
vibe.
A maturity to like, if you know, what did your parents do? They stayed together.
They stayed together, still together. My dad ran a music magazine
mm-hmm.
and a few magazines, but the main one was a music magazine. And my mom helped with that. And also she had four kids. And,
oh yeah. You okay. Know, so you're
yeah.
one of four.
Yeah. One of four.
Okay. Okay. We're in the Bay Area.
We were in the East Bay.
Okay.
We were in Danville.
Sure.
That
yeah.
Sounds familiar.
I lived in, yeah. Yeah. I lived in San Francisco. Okay. So I know. Yeah. My dad actually had a girlfriend who lived
in Danville.
Really enough. Yeah.
Cool.
She was a school teacher.
Oh,
maybe she was your school
maybe
teacher.
She was mine.
I know.
Off the pod. You got to give me your name.
I will give you her name offline. I'm like, can I remember her
yeah,
last
also,
name?
Can you
can
remember?
I remember yeah. her last name? That's kind of obviously no place is perfect, but
right.
some of those like slightly more remote East North Bay, even South Bay, like places in Northern California, mm-hmm. They can have kind of like an idyllic
yeah.
feel to them.
They're
it's very special up there.
I know. And it's a funny thing to sort of, I mean, I get, I'm sure a lot of people have this feeling about their like childhood home, but again, like along with being aware that my family was like I was grateful for my family.
Yeah.
I was also very grateful to like grow up in the northern, you know, like the East Bay of Northern California. It just felt very like, oh, this is a lovely place
yeah,
to grow.
Yeah.
I like knew that, you know.
Yeah. That's huge. I think.
I knew it was. It was
yeah.
I mean also I'm like, gosh, I really do sound like a little cheesy. Like it wasn't, I don't mean to say that this was like some perfect childhood.
I don't think, I mean, that's not how I'm taking it. I think there is an overarching, mm-hmm. I mean, I feel the same way about my dad. I feel super lucky to
yeah.
have had the parent that I had who really I consider to be like the primary,
yeah.
you know, he raised me.
Yeah.
We had a wonderful relationship. We both look back on it so positively. we for sure would get into screaming matches, yeah, right. And like, not, right, I would like, be so pissed, and he would, you know what I mean? Like, there was plenty of like, I'm so disappointed in you, Janet, stuff like that. Yeah. But it's the package. I think it is sort of, and even then, even when we were screaming at each other, like I still knew. Do you know what I mean? We wouldn't stay angry.
Right.
There was a sense of let's get back to stasis for us is positive.
Yep.
And you can look around and see, literally, you can compare and go, that's not true for everyone.
Right.
You know? Right. So I totally get that.
It was also, I'm thinking back, like we were sort of the, like home for we just sort of collected people.
Mm-hmm,
there's always someone's friend.
No, I really, because that's exactly how my friend Torrance parents were. It was like, I know Tom and Joey would take me.
We always had some friend. Either you know, my older sister. She would I'm trying to think of what the ages were, because we started that young. Like it's not even college.
Where do
friends.
You fall in the four?
I'm second.
Okay, yeah,
just a year younger than my older sister, and then we have a brother. 3 years younger than me, and a sister 9 years younger than me.
Gotcha.
And
that's such a similar breakdown to my mom. My mom has been four, and it is. It's like this, and then that. Like the last, like, oh, and grandpa came home from the war.
And you know, even though we're 9 years apart, my sister Miranda and I are super, super close. It doesn't even, when I tell, I'm almost like reluctant to tell people how far apart we are because we are so close. It feels like, well, you couldn't really.
Yeah. Like, let's not do the disservice to our relationship putting that age gap there for other people to perceive.
And
as
we
a thing.
Do, you know, to this day, we hang out a lot and we have a lot of mutual friends. And there is always a thing where someone is like, how, what are you guys, like 3 years apart, 4 years apart? And we're like, well, almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, so there was this feeling of like everybody's welcome. And we always had, you know, somebody's in our extra room, or like there was a long time where one of my sister's friends lived with us. And it is lovely to look back on.
Yeah.
That. It's such a nice way to grow up, and it's such a nice sort of example to have. Like,
your parents must have been so like pleased and grateful themselves to sort of be that. I mean, like, what a great.
I wonder why they
hope
like that.
They were. Yeah, yeah, I hope that they too were like, you know, this is really like we're happy to do this.
Right.
And it feels great to be a resource that isn't a kid running away or, you know.
Yeah. I'm trying to I know my mom grew up with seven in her family. My dad only had three. But I wonder what that is, where it never seemed like a big conversation. It wasn't like behind closed doors, maybe they talked it over. But it always just seemed like, they can stay here for a while.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Was that was everyone kind of active in whatever church it was that the church camp of which you went?
The church vibe is weird with my family. We are Episcopalian.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. I'm fascinated by the differences in where everything branched off.
Yeah.
I'm fascinated, yet I can't seem to detain the whys and the whens.
And I don't want to like act like I know.
Right.
We started going to church, and I remember my mom, my dad grew up going to like Greek Orthodox church, and my mom didn't go to church at all.
Mm-hmm.
And when they, I think I might be getting this wrong, but when they discovered the Episcopalian church, I remember they were like, women can be priests and gay people can be priests. We're going to go there. And it was like,
God love, you know, I think that was Northern California.
Yeah, exactly. My mom was, or maybe you're not even called priest. I don't know what it is, but my mom, I think really pushed against the like religious world until she was like, okay, it's just a like lovely community of people.
Sure.
And as a kid going to church, it was great. And it really was, it felt very much like community more than religion. And it wasn't until I sort of realized like in college when I was like, what is this? That was kind of the first time I was like, what is this? I don't know. I like the people. I like singing together. I like that we did plays. Like there was a lot. I like, you know, drinking juice and cookies afterwards. There was a lot of like in the camps and things like that. But then I remember it was like when I went away and came back and I was just like sitting there listening to the words. I was like, what the hell are we talking about?
Oh my God. I get it. All that and so much more is waiting for you when you become a member at MaximumFun.org/join. Do it now! And I can't wait for you to enjoy the rest of the drive. Hey, remember why?
save kittens from trees or lunch on skyscrapers. Bring the villains to their knees. Maybe we should.
Maximum Fun.
A worker-owned network
of artist-owned shows
supported
directly
by you.